Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hello, welcome to my podcast. It's May 13th, 2020, and I am here with Lydia Camarillo. I am so excited to have her as my guest today. She is president of the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project and Willie Valesquez Institute. SVREP is what we'll refer to it from now on. It's based in San Antonio, and it's an important part and plays an important role in the political empowerment of the Latino community, which I'm sure Lydia will go in to the history of the organization. I'm excited to have her for various reasons. The first time I met her, which was this year at the United States Hispanic Leadership Institute in Chicago, I just immediately vibed with her. She just has this great spirit. And of course, I'm always inspired by other women leaders. What is also interesting is, as an undergrad at Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta, Georgia, my senior thesis was on the SVREP. And so I was just so excited to hear that they had Lydia as their leader, had a female leader. She's only, I believe, the fourth president of the organization. And so I'm just excited to have her also as a native Texan, you know, with the organization being located in San Antonio. And I was thinking recently, San Antonio to the Mexican-American community is what Atlanta is to the Black community. And so I'm just so, for me, it's just, and my family has a long history in San Antonio. We're from Brownwood, Texas, but my grandfather's from Fredericksburg and Bernie area and grew up in San Antonio. So we have a long history with San Antonio, and then I end up here in Atlanta. So with my Black Mexican cultural identity is great to be connected with Lydia in San Antonio. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Lydia to tell us all about her personal and professional evolution. Tell us about the SVREP and what the Institute is doing now, what your goals are, what our audience needs to know in terms of how we can do more to support your work and do more for the empowerment of the Mexican American / wider Latino, Latina community. Welcome, Lydia.
Thank you for the invitation. And I do have to echo that the first day we met, we immediately, clicked. I think we had the energy, the connection, and then we had a wonderful time getting to know each other. So it's been a pleasure to get to know you, and I look forward to having this, as my son says, for the rest of our lives. Yes. But the conversation today is about Latino, Southwest voter, Latino empowerment, and to some extent, some of the challenges we have this year. So let me just start by saying that our challenge this year are a number of things. This year is an unprecedented election. It is the most consequential election of our lifetime for a number of reasons. First of all, we have a virus, the coronavirus, that is clearly hurting people, killing people. It's a deadly disease. It is a global pandemic that is causing chaos in families. Families are losing their jobs. They're not only losing their families and friends through, you know, they're losing their lives, but they're also losing their jobs. We have, 30 million people that are unemployed. We will probably have the worst unemployment in our history since the Depression. We're already at those kinds of levels. Schools are not interacting in person. How do you teach a 5-year-old whose second language is English? How do you, or another language, or the those children that have disabilities? I know my son is in college, and he's been having his classes through college, and it's not the same thing. It's not the same interaction. So I know that the education of our children is something we have to keep an eye on in terms of its long-term effect. Having said that, this year is important for a number of reasons. It's an election year. It's a presidential cycle. It's also the year that we count our communities during the census. The census has implications in terms of resources for our communities, as well as the work of gaining congressional seats as a result of the gaining. During this census count, we also have a number of problems. First, the administration refused to really allocate the kind of resources you would need in a normal day. And now we've got the issue of how do you count people? How do you find out where they're at with this pandemic with us? We also have, for the first time, people are filling out the application online. And then we have the essence of being shut down. We're shut down. The even though there is conflict between some states and some national conflict between do we open up already, it's just May, or do we still continue to close given what the scientists have told us? They have told us very clearly that we need a vaccine. We need to have testing of who has the virus, who doesn't. We need to have distancing, which is why we're taking this effort. Well, right now we're away from each other, but we're having meetings and situations, and children are learning through their computers. And some children and some people do not have computers. That's another issue. So it's a challenging year for the census. Texas is supposed to gain 3 to 4 congressional seats. Georgia is supposed to gain a seat. Colorado is supposed to gain a seat. So is Arizona. New York will likely lose 1 or 2 seats. Florida is supposed to gain 2 seats. But it depends on if we count our communities and we fill the census. Now, the good news is that it's been extended. If the deadline had been like in most cycles, April 1st, where we had to complete it, and then there's some time in between that and June or July, where then people knock on their doors to go see who didn't complete the form, self-responses. We did terrible. Most in past years, it's been 67, 75%, depending on the year. The nation was in their 40s. And depending on the state and depending on the congressional seat, today it's still as low as in some places, 35 or less percent respond rate, which means that people will lose resources like hospital money, resources for hospitals and police and the schools. We know that educators tell me all the time that the best scenario is to have a ratio of one teacher per 20 children. And if we don't count the children in those communities, it can end up being one teacher for 35, 45 students, which is part of the problem. So the census is very important. The redistricting is very important. It's political power and representation for our communities. And just like we know we have to worry about being counted and making sure that we figure out the redistricting process, we know that Texas in the last cycle grew by 4.3 million and gained the 4 new congressional seats. As a result, Latinos were able to gain 2 new Latino seats that were drawn as Latino seats. A lot of the members of Congress in the Black community and the Latino community and the Asian community, it's because there are seats that are drawn to represent communities of color. And that has implications on our community. So we may lose some members of Congress that look like us, that represent our communities if we're not counted. So it's a very important year for those reasons. The election, the census, and then we have a pandemic that clearly is not going to end today, tomorrow. at best, the scientists have said that it may take anywhere from 18 months to find a vaccine to some have said 5-10 years. Now there's competition going on to see who will bring it. So that's a good sign, so that hopefully somebody will find it. But those are the challenges. So I wanted to sort of take a few minutes to sort of discuss the challenges. The next question is, how does an organization like ours, and who is Southwest Voter, by the way, so if I may take a second. Willie Velasquez founded Southwest Voter in San Antonio, Texas. In 1974, it became a formal organization. But in 1968, Willie, along with other leaders from LULAC, League of United Latin American Citizens, and MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, were having conversations about how do we protect our community from discrimination? And they modeled the organization. LULAC is modeled after the NAACP organization, membership organization. Mm-hmm. Some of those members were lawyers at the time in 1968, at a time when civil rights was not only blossoming and blooming, but we were affirming ourselves as communities to take our right in history and in society in America. So Willie Velasquez talked to the lawyers that were LULAC members who were now saying, how do we stop discrimination at all levels, housing, jobs, including the redistricting efforts that have to be drawn? LULAC then said, we're going to start the Mexican American Defense Fund. Again, similar model from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And Willie said at that time, he was very young. These folks were very, very young. You have to take into the situation that Willie was in his 20s, early 20s. And he said to Mario Bledo, who was the president of MALDEF and LULAC, this is before it all started. MALDEF started officially in 1968. Filed their papers, they became an organization. It's 50 years old and they've won a number of cases to protect our communities that serve not just the Black community, the Latino community, but the Black and Asian and other communities of color through the legal cases they have won. And at that same point, Willie said, we need to register voters because another thing that we need to do is empower. So, again, modeled after the NAACP Voter Fund. Mm-hmm. So Southwest Voter proceeded to file its papers in 1960. It took from 1968, and every year he would file, and he would be rejected, to 1974 when the organization became an official organization. We would be 50 years today at 4. Willie was blacklisted because they didn't want Latinos or Mexicanos at that point to register Mexicans. Or rather Mexican-Americans, or if you're in Texas, Tejanos to vote. So this is an important part of the story is Willie asked Mario Bledo, help me, and what's going on here? So at that point, the stars were aligned, and Mario was on his way to D.C., and he says, I'm going to go to D.C. So he stopped at the Department of Justice, and that's how he discovered that Willie was blacklisted for that reason. There was no other reason other than that. He had been involved with activist organizations that he started, youth like MECHA and other groups that we all were a part of, who helped, again, assert our political power, our essence of who we are in this country. And so, 1974, we get our C3 status and we become a formal organization. But Willie also knows that he still needs advice about how do you do this. We've never done this before. So Congressman Lewis, who at the time was one of the leaders of one of the most prominent organizations, says and tells us how to do this. He gives us technical assistance, which, by the way, I'm saying this because I know we're having a conversation about the natural relationships that the Black community and the Latino community have had. But we also were fortunate enough, lucky enough, I wasn't there. It was Willie, the first president, and Andy Hernandez, the second president, and Antonio Gonzalez, the third president, who were asked at the time that Mandela became president, tell us how to do this. And of course, Andy Hernandez, the second president, spoke to the folks that that called and said, we need advice. And he laughed and he said, you don't need advice, you're going to win. And he goes, yes, but we've never had an election. So they go and they provide assistance. But again, they didn't need the assistance. But I think they needed the validity of this is how it works. This is what happens. This is what's going to happen. So I sidetracked, but I think it's an important part of the history to get a feel. So we're officially 46 years old. Willie started registering voters by literally he had a folding chair, folding table, a rotary phone. Some of you who are listening might not know what that is, but ask your mom or your grandma. And a phone book. And he would literally call from 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon and say, Ramona, good morning, good afternoon. Are you registered to vote? And if you would say yes, then the next question is there anybody in your household that needs to be registered? And if you'd say no, either way, he'd make an appointment to come and see you in the evening to go get your register. And that's how it began. We have now registered 2.7 million Latinos and other communities in the U.S., mostly in the Southwest and then later in Georgia and in Florida. We've trained 155,000 Latino leaders about political empowerment, about understanding who they are. We must always understand our history and move that history forward to understand our pathway to the future. And after that, we've also won 210 voting rights lawsuits. Mm. We've been very lucky that Joaquin Avila, another great heroes of our movement. We call them the father of voting rights within the Latino community, created and helped to pass a bill in California called the California Voting Rights Act, which, by the way, we're hoping that other states will follow that suit. Why is that important? Because since the Shelby ruling, constitutional ruling that has basically put aside, I like to call it, it's in a shell, Section 5 of the voting rights, our voting rights is pending until it gets reauthorized. Mm-hmm. But in California, they passed it and it works. So, one day, Antonio Gonzalez, the president, the former president of Southwest Water, who unfortunately we lost him, he lost his battle to cancer in 2018, called me and said, you know, we have the Voting Rights Act, what do we do with it? And so we decided to do some homework. If California is such a rich, progressive state, a super blue state and getting bluer by the moment, does it truly represent the communities of color mm-hmm. in jurisdictions that are at the local level? And so we did some homework. We found out that hundreds and hundreds of communities that are school boards, water boards, city councils are the populations may be Asian, may be Black, may be Latino, but the governing bodies are not because the elections are held at large. And so the California Voting Rights gave us the opportunity to sue, and we have now moved and transformed 100 jurisdictions from at large to single member districts, and we have many first again, first city council member, first school board member. And of course we coupled that strategy of filing those challenges with registering voters, with finding candidates, with training candidates to run for office, and training organizers to organize their community. Because bottom line is that when Willie started the organization, the concept wasn't that we wanted to have a job, rather that we wanted community to speak for themselves, fight for themselves, to empower themselves, and to have self-determination. So that's where we're at. I haven't really talked too much about myself. Frankly, I'm a Mexicana, Latina, Chicana. We don't really like to talk about ourselves. So before I say a few things about myself, let me just say this. Southwest Voter had already reached out to 1,000 high schools in Texas for this election cycle. We were on our way to registering voters in those places. And then Texas shuts down. So now the next strategy is moving from what we are. Our strength has always been grassroots. Mm-hmm. Our strength is door-to-door, phone banking, live, repetitive contacts. That's who we are. That's who we'll always be. But this year requires us to shift from the way we work. We work from grassroots, complementing social media and other indirect ways of contacting voters, and TV and radio and all of that. Campaigns do that first. We do grassroots first, and then we complement depending on resources. Well, this year we have to do a lot of social media. We're going to, next week, we're going to launch our app. It's not a new app. We put together the app in 2016. It has to be updated given the new rules, the new laws. For instance, there were less than 30, I believe there were 33 states that could register online. Now there's 39. So we have to make sure we do that. We also are bringing issues so that people can figure out at the end of the day, not only register online, but where do you go vote when we have elections, among other things. So the app will be launched next week. And our goal is to use the app, using social media, to register voters online in those 33 states, which include, by the way, Georgia, Florida, Arizona, Colorado, California, among others, Michigan. So we will work really hard to make sure that we partner with other groups to do this. Second, we are obviously going to be buying ads in our social media platforms so that we can engage communities. And then if by some chance America truly opens up again and we're not in danger and our lives aren't in danger, then we'll open the doors and go knock at the doors and we'll couple that. But for now, we're sort of shifting our strategy. I mean, think about this. Who on earth is going to open the door to a Latina, a Black woman, an Asian, if we knock on the door and we're wearing a mask? So that really creates a difficult thing. The next thing is, how do we vote? We saw that in Wisconsin, hundreds and hundreds of people were in line. They cut the hours because we don't have the voting rights. Hours have been cut. So the systematic barriers have existed, continue to exist, but will be getting even worse and more complicated with virus. So those are the part of the challenges. Last but not least, in terms of the challenges, is money and resources are being moved to feeding people, helping people, finding
PPE.
Thank you.
Personal protection
equipment.
Yes.
For everybody, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But that means that organizations like ours, who has a big mandate given the year, it's an election year, a consequential year, it's a census year. How do we make sure we reach people if less resources are available? So that's an issue. But I've had the opportunity and pleasure and privilege of working with South Dakota Voter in one way or another for a lifetime. I didn't know this then, but I helped as a volunteer register voters when I was 18, when I was at UC Santa Cruz. I worked for MALDEF and other organizations, but I had the opportunity of becoming the executive director in 1994 and moved from Los Angeles when I was working in MALDEF, to San Antonio to run the Texas office and work in partnership with then Antonio Gonzalez, the president, to make sure that we would move the organization forward. In 1999, I was invited by Vice President Al Gore to run the 2000 Democratic National Convention. So I left. You know the story of what happened there. And then I came back in 03. So I've been with the organization in what I call two cycles for almost 21, 22 years. And in that time, I either was the executive director or I'm now the president. And vice president, because when I came back, my title was vice president, and then now I'm the president. So we work with the Greg Moore from the NAACP Voter Fund, with other groups on the field side. With we work in partnership with MALDEF and all the organizations that are trying to figure out how do we have an election that's fair and where our vote is honored and counted. And then we sue when we need to sue. You know, we were part of the cities and states and that sued to stop the Census Bureau from including the citizenship question, among the other stuff that we do. The most important thing that we do is we look at a person's eye and we ask him to think about their children, to think about their parents and their grandparents, and imagine a world where they are respected and treated with respect and dignity. And we know that the vote is one of those ways that you do this. And Willie coined it well. Su voto es su voz. Your vote is your voice. Your voice, our vote is our power.
Thank you so much, Lydia. You know, you going through the challenges that our communities are facing and then looking at the solutions and the importance, which is the most important factor, the importance of self-determination and self-empowerment and being able to determine our own future and being able to embrace our power. This is a powerful story in terms of the work that SVREP has done and continues to do, and that they continue to work on behalf of all communities, even now during this pandemic and the systemic issues that we are facing now. Thank you so much for joining us. If anybody would like to find you, please give us your website address as well as your social media platforms. And could you let our audience know what they can do to support you or support your work?
Thank you. Thank you. Let me first thank you and thank you for writing your thesis on Southwest Voter. I hope that it feels the same in many ways, but we've evolved given the world, how it's changing, and the invitation. So Southwest Voter, you can reach us at svrep.org. S is in Sam, V is in Victor, E is in Edward. I think I'm saying it wrong. Let me start over. S is in Sam, V is in Victor, R is in Run, E is in Edward, P is in Paul.org. You can also reach us at 210-922-0225. You can find me at El Camarillo 1 at or on Twitter or El Camarillo at svip.org. And more importantly, we ask you to think about a couple of things that we want you to do. Right now, go make sure that everybody in your family and your network has submitted the census. Make sure that everybody in your family and friends have registered to vote. If they miss the deadline, they haven't missed the deadline. There's an election. November 3rd is the most important election. If you have a primary, you still have an opportunity. You may have already missed the registration deadline, but you still have to worry about the November election, November 3rd. Do that. If you want to be a volunteer, a donor, reach out to me, Lydia Camarillo, L Camarillo at srp.org, and we'll put you to work if you want to volunteer, and we'll take your dollars. And I promise you, given the evaluations we have had, we stretch them every dollar to $5. We're a nonprofit, and the volunteers make that possible. We work with many people who want to change their communities for the better. So, gracias.
Thank you. Gracias. So we have, just to repeat, we need you to register to vote. We need you to fill out those census forms. And of course, you can always volunteer and donate to the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project. They appreciate your support. They appreciate your love and contributions. And most of all, that you embrace the power that you have to participate in the political process. Thank you so much, Lydia Camarillo. Will you come back and do another podcast with us soon?
It would be an honor. And I'm looking forward to also breaking bread once we can.
Yes.
Just for the sake of breaking bread.
Yes, yes, of course. And I love to eat on top of that. All right. We'll see you soon. We'll see you soon. Good luck with your work and many peace and blessings. If I can ever be of service, please feel free to reach out to me as well. Thank you.
Thank you. She just said she wants to volunteer. So
yes, yes, yes. You can count on me. Just let me know whenever you need me. Thank you, Lydia. Gracias.
Talk to you later.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And, of course, our featured guest.